This is ITE 1, Module 6. Hopefully the only part. That would be so good. All right. So does anybody need anything? Any questions on labs? Anything pending that anybody needs?
Do we advertise your CD like we did yesterday? Grace's CD is around if anybody wants it.
It's quite good.
She'll be singing with me at some point in the future, won't you, Grace?
Yeah, absolutely, as soon as I get my stuff together. Okay, so if nobody has any questions about labs, then, or anything else, no pending questions on the courses. Everybody is doing super, super well that is submitting labs, so thank you for submitting your labs, 30%.
The labs are worth 30%.
Yeah, they weren't that much last semester. It behooves you to do...
Well, you're not going to pass if you don't. So, we figured that since you guys have to do so much hard work, we would make them worth more. So if you need help, let us know. Let us know if you need help actually completing them. We will meet up with you and give you a hand with research skills and all that.
Just a point. I was just going to say that don't forget, people, that this Ventrilo server is available 24 hours a week, 7 days a week. Anyway, you get the idea. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And there are people in your time zone. Sometimes Drew gets bored and he can come on. In fact, sometimes he's just on. And Sean also works and is
that.
Now...
I never do that.
Well, if you email the list or email the instructor's alias... Now, Drew's not on the instructor's alias, but, you know, some of these people can come on and help you in your time zone. Yeah, it's okay. It's all right. And keep in mind that there are people who can help you when it is convenient for you and hopefully convenient for them. Okay, so keep that in mind and do make use of the Ventrilo server and your other students. It's all about building a personal network. You should have other people's brain to pick other than your own.
And Skype is probably the best way to get in touch with me, but if you want me on Ventrilo, email me or something or whatever.
It behooves you later on for job placement.
Anybody who wants my MSN, it's my email address. But if you annoy me, I'll block you. You have been warned.
And if you need mine, hey, most of you have it. But if you don't and want it, let me know, and you can have it.
And if you don't know what my email address is, may I recommend the List Archives? And if anybody hasn't been in the List Archives, give it a go. It's quite cool, actually. All right, onwards and upwards, Grace. Let's do these laptops, netbooks, palm tops, handhelds, mobile phones, and anything that's smaller than a big brick.
Can I say something very quick?
Can you?
What do you want?
I don't know. I just wanted something I wanted to mention last week and didn't get a chance to because we were doing a lot of talking about the OS or of Windows 7. We were talking about like the desktop and the start menu layout and the Explorer window and stuff. I was just mentioning that if you want to try, if you're really attached to say the classic XP start menu and the old Explorer, then try a program called Classic Shell that is open source and will help you replace the XP start menu, and it does some stuff to the Explorer window, though I haven't had as much success with that. But yeah. And you can switch between the two if you don't like one. You can go back to the other. It's a pretty great little program if you want to try and keep your XP style view. It helps.
Cool. Okay. How about a quiz, guys, from last semester?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Not last semester. last chapter. That's because we haven't finished a module in a long time. Okay. Everybody, in your chat windows, if people don't remember how to do that, just... Alt-tab into your chat window. If your chat window is not up, click the chat button, and it will appear.
Just a point. Has anybody ever tried to teach somebody who has no idea about computers how to Alt-tab and how you have to hold the Alt key down and keep pressing the tab until the window you want comes up and then release the Alt key? It's very challenging.
I'm going to do that.
I've been doing that twice this week.
Last week, I almost had the stuffing scared out of me when a student at the Disability Resource Center said, well, the last computer I used, I had to type in something called Lion's Line, and it magnified the bottom line of the screen. I'm thinking, you mean DOS,
oh,
don't you?
Dear.
Wow.
Oh, I did not have...
Is everybody in the chat window?
First time, I'll just say that.
Okay, first question, to see if everybody's in the chat window. Your instructors are A, incredibly talented and wonderful people, happy to impart their knowledge. B, a bunch of dregs at the pub. C, not worth talking to. Or D, need to be taken away and locked up. Please answer now. And if you said D, you're correct. No, it's an A.
How about the real question one? Oh,
it's so great not having to worry about labs anymore.
Okay, true.
He's done them. He's doing for the new content. Yeah. Okay, off you go, Gross. Let's.
Okay. All right. Question one. Which Windows operating system is capable of addressing up to 128 gigabytes of RAM? Is it Vista x86, XP x86, Vista x64, or Vista Professional? I'll give you a clue. It isn't the first word doesn't matter. The actual XP or Vista doesn't matter. It's something else.
Now you've just confused them all. Yep. Oh, they've all got it, except for one person.
It is C, you guys, because 64-bit operating systems are the only ones that can address more than 4 gigs of memory. Good job.
So XP64 addresses all the way up to 128.
Yes, it does, but that wasn't one of the choices.
Right.
I mean, the fact that you can't get drivers for anything under XP64, you can address the memory, but you won't be able to run any other device on your system. Right. Well, that's a bit harsh. But driver support for XP64 is pretty thin on the ground, which is why everybody gave up and either went to Windows Vista /7 or went back to 32-bit.
Yep. All right, question two. Which three steps should be performed to upgrade Windows XP to Windows Vista? Choose three, so this will be a yes or no. A, select the upgrade option. Absolutely. That would be pretty obvious. Okay. Number two, install XP Service Pack 2.
I would...
Actually, yes.
I would reword that. Install XP Service Pack 2 or above is how I'd word that.
Yeah, possibly. But that's what they have in their question. But yeah, actually, if you're doing an upgrade from XP, you do have to make sure that it has Service Pack 2 installed. Why? I'm not sure.
Because the whole internet connection sharing and firewalling and networking framework was overhauled in SP2, and it's more compatible with the newer operating systems, with the new internet connection firewall and all that sort of stuff. And if you don't apply that, there are also a lot of fixes to the operating system in SP2.
The reason I'm not sure... SP2 was...
should still be in
SP2 was like... huge. The question I have, though, is that you can upgrade a bunch of operating systems that are older and didn't have any of those fixes, and you don't have to install anything extra, I don't believe. So
yes,
that's
you
why
do.
I'm like, huh.
You have to have Service Pack 6 or better for Windows NT if you're going to upgrade it, and it is expected that you apply most of the recent updates before you perform an operating system upgrade, because there are actually bugs in the operating system that can prevent the upgrade from occurring correctly. I think they mention XP because it is such a common scenario, but I think you'll find there are prerequisites for the other upgrade paths as well. For example, I believe if you're upgrading Vista, you need at least Service Pack 1.
Yep, that's true on Vista. I know that for 7. Okay, do you need to select the upgrade to NTFS file system option? Nope, because you don't get a choice. Do you need to download important updates to Windows Vista? Yep, absolutely. That's a new feature in Windows Vista, that it will allow you to download updates before you even get to install it. All right, since we've got our three, we'll move on. Which two Windows operating systems can be upgraded to Windows Vista? Now, this is up for debate. Honestly, I looked through the text notes, and I looked on the internet, and I'm not finding a definitive answer to this. So if you do, let us know, and you'll get a virtual cookie. Is it A, Windows 95? And that would be a definite no.
What was the question?
Which operating systems can be upgraded to Windows Vista? How about Windows ME? Okay, that was one of the ones I was kind of unsure on.
It's not an NT kernel, so I would assume not.
Yeah, I didn't think so, but Carrie was like, yeah, no, you probably could, so...
They sort of tried to munge NT and 9X together and made a mess, which is probably why.
Yeah, basically.
Even if you can, you probably
I wouldn't recommend doing it, but you might be able to. How about Windows NT? My thoughts on this would be a probably, because it is an NT kernel, and if you have Service Pack 6, it should go.
What are your other options?
Windows 2000 and Windows for Workgroups.
Windows NT, I don't think you can, Grace. Windows 2000, you can.
Windows 2000, you can.
Yeah. How many do you need?
Two.
then I would think it would be Windows 2000 and...
Millennium? It's either Millennium or NT.
Yeah, Millennium or NT.
I'm really not sure which, and I tried to look this up.
I think it'll be NT.
Except if you try to install Vista on Millennium, Millennium would probably melt the computer or something.
I have seen Millennium work. I'm sorry, I know you people won't believe me, but I have seen Millennium work properly on a computer.
Pretty well, yeah. For a couple years, but then it stopped.
Well, it crashed a lot for me, and I'm not sure whether it was because it was a Millennium computer or a Toshiba computer. It may have been just because of the Toshiba.
It crashed, it caused a blue screen of death, and then a blue screen of death upon reboot from coming out of a screensaver.
Actually, I've got a DOS box that still works, but I don't talk about it, especially at parties.
No,
I have a DOS box that worked in 2000.
Hey, DOS boxes are cool. Text games are awesome. Yeah.
If anybody cares enough to actually look that up and try and find out which one it is, go you. If not, well, since we're not really going to be upgrading to Vista anymore, really, I think we'll just say that doesn't really matter that much.
Oh, that's right, Vista. I was thinking 7 this whole time, haven't I?
Well, it does matter because some people are only licensed to go to Vista and some computers are only licensed to go to Vista. And when you bought laptops and stuff, you actually got a Vista disk and the XP disks and you got the free upgrade to Vista. So it sort of does matter.
But if it's XP, it's a done deal. You can upgrade. These other operating systems, you're kind of...
Can't you upgrade from XP to Vista?
You can.
That's the point. But that's what I'm saying.
She's saying if you bought 2000, you wouldn't have a Vista free.
Yeah, so that's not.
You'd end up buying a new OS.
Basically. Anyway, moving on. Which three items are Windows Control Panel categories? Choose three. This is a stretch if you haven't actually seen a Vista machine. Is a yes or no? User accounts? Yes, it is. Is the command prompt a control panel category? No, absolutely not. Good jobs. How about Windows Explorer? Perfect. Good job, guys. No. Appearance and themes? Absolutely. Microsoft Management Console? No, that is not. But you can find it under administrative tools. So, good job. That was actually put in there to kind of mess people up, and you all got it right. Network and internet connections.
Except administrative tools is not visible by default.
Administrative tools. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, administrative tools is not visible by default unless you actually go in and change the preference to show it. Because there's actually a preference in the view options that says show administrative tools in control panel, and for a regular user, it is off by default. Yeah, most of us turn us off.
I wouldn't expect.
Administrative tools is scary.
No, doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't have to.
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, here's a good one. It's another mind bender if you've not seen an XP computer or Vista computer. Right clicking on the Windows XP desktop and selecting properties enables users to customize the desktop theme. Which path and procedure enables the same operation on a Windows Vista computer? Is it, and this is a multiple choice here, so right-click the desktop, choose Personalize. B, choose Start, Control Panel, Device Manager. C, right-click the desktop, choose Graphics Properties. Choose Start, Control Panel, Performance and Maintenance. Choose Now. It's actually A.
We talked about this last week, guys, because remember we were talking about how not to select anything and we were arguing whether control space worked or not. Actually talked about this last week. Yeah, we found that out.
Okay, what is the Windows Vista graphical pane that displays and organizes small programs such as clock, games, and web information? Remember, Brian and I were having a talk about this last week. Is it the A, sidebar, B, my computer, C, gadget organizer, or D, desktop shortcut? It's actually A,
there's
the sidebar.
Yes, the sidebar has gadgets. It's not called the gadget organizer. Little trick there.
I like that, though. I wish it was called...
Yeah, that would just sound much better and be more...
Aren't they ripping something off from OS X with the...
Kind of dashboard. With widgets.
Okay.
Yeah,
widgets.
I never use it anyway.
I hate it. A computer has Vista installed, but the computer has problems. The technician determines that a clean copy of the operating system should be installed. Which option should be chosen from the menu when the machine is booted to install it? Is that going to be A, setup, B, repair, C, upgrade, or D, custom advanced? Choose now. For those of you that said D, absolutely right. It's going to be a custom advanced install because you want to actually clean everything off that computer, wipe it clean, and go again.
I don't think it actually says advanced. It just says custom. I could be wrong.
It does. It does say advanced.
Okay.
All right, guys. Fantastic. So today we are going to talk about various other portable devices.
Just move your microphone down a smidge closer because you're...
Okay, is that better?
Yep, because you're actually losing bits of word.
Perfect.
Is the silence supposed to linger?
I thought that was just me.
No, it's me.
Sweetheart, because mine's known to do that on occasion. I'll just miss part of what Grace is saying for 30 seconds or so.
I was just kind of having a little bit of a freak out when I'm trying to open up my notes. Because they weren't actual drive I was on, and I'm like, oh my gosh, where'd they go? But it's all good.
Yay, you found...
Yay. I was in the other drive to see the test, and... Oh. Alright, so... it's going to be Module 6, which is our laptop module. And the last few weeks, we've actually been talking about desktop computers mainly, and the software and hardware for those. Today we're going to talk about portable devices. The first laptop was the GRI D-Compass 1101, which was used on space missions in the 1980s. It weighed 11 pounds, which is slightly heavier than a Perkins Brailer, and cost $8,000 to $10,000. So we've got this huge Perkins Brailer type thing, and you get to carry it around. Oh, and it's not very powerful. It might be about as good as slightly better than a Perkins Brailer in the fact that it can do math and built-in calculator that can work on a space station. How's that?
That must be one strong lap.
Yeah, okay, it's a luggable computer is more of what it really is. Now you can get a netbook that weighs 2 or 3 pounds that costs $300 US. Not saying that that's going to be the top-of-the-line state-of-the-art computer, but it'll probably do your word processing and let you browse the internet. Portable devices will only be... yep. Portable.
That was just funny.
Yeah, the way you did that was
interesting. I saw a Core 2 Duo laptop for under $300. 4 USB was crazy.
Wow!
Just a warning for people, watch out buying a new netbook, because some of them come with a combo headphone-microphone jack, and that's not cool if you want to plug in a headset.
Ooh. Is that just Apple ones?
No.
Asus.
They're starting to do it on Asuses. We're going to talk about some of the things you should...
Don't know.
We're going to talk about some of the things you should and should not look for in buying a computer, a laptop, because there are some definite no-nos and some things that are actually really good, and we're going to make a list of do's and don'ts for buying portable devices and laptops. They'll only become more popular as prices continue to drop and the devices become more and more powerful. So that's why we really need to know about them and know what to do. Break. The term laptop and notebook are interchangeable when referring to portable computers. This text uses laptop still. A lot of people are starting to use a notebook, so you will hear either term, same thing.
I was hearing notebook for
you. Okay. Kind of wrong.
So has anyone here not actually used any kind of notebook?
My first one had Dawson screen power on it.
Fantastic. Wow. All right, cool.
How heavy was that?
About as big as one of the modern media center laptops.
Not bad.
Fair enough. Okay, so laptops are computers that are slim and light, and they fit in a backpack. You all know this. Today, they often come with external video ports, FireWire, and even built-in webcams. All laptops can be used on battery when AC power is not available. In the beginning, they were used by very important wealthy business people who needed to be able to be on the road and be productive at the same time. They were much too expensive and really much, much slower than desktops. But today, they're actually a real alternative to a desktop computer. Carrie and I both use laptops as desktop replacement machines. Other uses include taking notes in school or researching for papers. A lot of schools actually give kids their own laptops now to bring to school, and they all work on these laptops and do everything on these laptops. Presenting information in business meetings, accessing data away from home or the office, playing games while traveling, watching movies while traveling, accessing the internet in a public place, sending and receiving email in a public place, the list goes on. Any other creative uses you guys can think of for laptops?
Yes, so do I, actually. Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of problem when a school district in Pennsylvania decided in a fit of wisdom that they would put some kind of remote control software or on their computers and were basically able to activate the webcams and microphones without the students' knowledge and actually got video, audio, pictures of stuff that happened in the home. And they were like, oh, well, we know you were doing inappropriate things, and they showed the kid a picture. So they got massively
Yeah, because it was there was actually some domestic violence stuff lodged about things that were going on at home and stuff, and they never should have even known they were happening. It was a bit like the movie Sliver for real.
One of the kids was supposedly eating M&Ms, and they thought the kid was taking drugs, and they called him into the office and all this stuff. And it was really not a hot thing.
Yeah, forget about the domestic violence. Get the guy for eating M&Ms. Good, that's good.
Yep. Good job, guys.
You should be able to beat your children in private.
Oh my god!
Can we get an ID on that statement?
Actually, that has actually been done, and if you go and look at Wikipedia, there were some quite interesting promotions where children were given Prozac, because apparently it was going to solve all their problems. You know, guys, maybe you're just kids, okay? It was a very controversial thing, and you can look that up on Wikipedia if you look up Prozac on Wikipedia. Interesting reading.
And actually, people were getting in trouble for disabling their webcams at this school, and, well, all of this stopped, and the school district got in some very serious trouble. But if you get a laptop from some business, or your business, or your school district, maybe having a quick look at the software on there and just making sure that you know what it all is, and if you are worried about something like that, ask the IT people what that software might be.
The other problem you can face, just as a matter of point, is if you get a TAFE laptop, which is our tertiary education over here, or you get a school laptop, you're not allowed to install anything on it, you're not allowed to load anything on it. That includes JAWS. You've got to go and get special permission, and it's quite a battle. I mean, firstly, you've got a battle to get all your access tech, and then you've got a battle to get it installed on your laptop.
And you can't even uninstall anything. A friend got a laptop and tried to uninstall Norton from the college, and it wouldn't let her. They had to connect to its home server or disable the laptop.
Yep.
Connect over LAN, that is.
Musicians are using laptops in interesting creative ways.
I actually spoke to a musician who was actually looking at getting a netbook, because that way if somebody emptied a beer into it, it wouldn't be such a financial loss.
Yeah. Only problem with that is you don't get much RAM out of it, but other than that, it's a great idea.
The other thing that was a bit controversial.
Video players should produce it.
Other thing that was a big thing, remember when they were handing Kindles out and the colleges were recommending that people have Kindles? That was a bit of a portable device fiasco for accessibility reasons last year and probably still ongoing.
Oh, yeah, that
still
was lots of fun. I love the publisher trying so hard to explain why it's a bad idea to have accessible content on it. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
Good job, guys.
I'll just whip out my bookport and say, really?
Yeah, basically.
Well, no, you can't. I won't get into it. It's not the point.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so PDAs are small computerized devices with a touchscreen, keyboard, or both. They usually contain applications such as address book, calculator, alarm clock, internet access, email, and global positioning. Smartphones include the features of a PDA, plus, well, obviously the ability to make calls over the mobile network, built-in camera, document access, abbreviated note-taking, and the ability to watch television. it's really hard to draw the line between smartphones and PDAs. For me, I usually say that if it can make calls over a mobile cellular network, it's a smartphone. I can't really think of any other distinctions.
Historically, the reason there was a distinction was because the phone was actually an add-on to the PDA. So if you look at the HP iPac 41, whatever it was, the phone was actually a separate application. It wasn't actually sort of built into the device. So these notes are obviously sponsored by HP, or were sponsored by HP, and that's why the distinction was made.
Or really? Accessibility,
what were you going to say? Sean, what were you going to say? Then we'll have Eden Garten.
I was saying that it used to be important when you were installing access technology and it's on your mobile device, and in some cases it still is. You have to know, what does the manufacturer consider a smartphone or PDA?
Well, not anymore. They've universalized most of it.
It's still a different installer, though, isn't it?
Nope.
If it's Windows Mobile, it's different. If it's Symbian, it's different, but not if it's a PDA or a smartphone.
Yep.
Yeah, they took away MobileSpeak Pocket. I was going to say... I was just going to say that for accessibility purposes, well, I didn't take it away, but they may have just streamlined it. I was going to say for accessibility devices, if you look at the Alva MPO 5500, that is actually a PDA with a phone on it. I actually got to use one of those. It's different.
Really? Wow.
We'll talk about that later.
I always wanted to see one of those. Yeah. So honestly, most of the stuff you're going to get now, like the iPod Touch is a really good... example of a PDA, the iPod Touch versus the iPhone.
That horrifies.
PDAs use Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, infrared, and USB cables to connect to computers, the internet, and other devices. USB cables for portable devices are not standardized, and they really don't cover this in the text. For example, I've got two phones. One has a mini USB connector, and one has a micro USB connector. They do not match up. Many devices also use USB to charge as well. One thing I'd do if you've got a lot of different portable devices is pick yourself up a universal battery pack. It'll have all sorts of connectors for you to use, and you can just switch them out. It lives in your bag, whatever kind of bag you have. You pull it out and connect your device up, and it will charge your device.
Sometimes. Some of the battery packs, the iPods actually need pull-down resistors in series so that the iPod actually sees it as something that it should actually connect to. Otherwise, it won't make that noise and charge. So be aware of that.
Also, aren't they quite hard to find?
No.
They're everywhere.
Really?
Isn't the USB thing basically just everyone in the world using mini USB except for Nokia?
No. The new standard is now micro. Okay.
Really? Okay.
Micro has the little clips to hold things in.
Yeah.
So that's actually really helpful, and it doesn't fall out
as much.
Maybe
I haven't.
Okay.
Tiny little things GPS receivers use micro as well.
I actually like them, not because the clips, because it helps me orient the cable, so I know which end it goes in, so
yeah,
I don't waste time trying to figure out it's upside down.
Notches.
Yeah.
You guys get to do a lab that is totally fun. Except if you don't like to drool over computers, smartphones, and PDAs. And I always love this lab because I get to look at all of these things that you guys have found and say, oh my gosh, send me like three of those. You guys get to research a laptop, a smartphone, and a PDA, and you get to put down its features and price and all of that. Really fun to dream about the cool stuff that's out there and see what you could possibly get. Now, something I wanted to bring up, how do you guys feel about touchscreens? A lot of devices are now only coming with touchscreens instead of QWERTY keyboards. For those of us that have used them or people who
I like it on my
are wondering
iPod,
about them.
But that's because Apple's kind of catered for
I actually don't intend... or recommend using a touchscreen as a phone device. Now, I haven't actually played with one of my phone, only as an iPod, but because I feel in an emergency situation, I don't want to have to listen to what the speech says. I want a tactile. I want to feel that 911 when I push it in.
You shouldn't really be using a cell phone to call 911 anyway.
Why do you?
Sometimes
you don't have a choice.
Sometimes, sometimes you don't have a choice. They don't recommend you call 911 on a cellular network because you can't always get access to the cellular network. Although the point I would like to make here is that the emergency number for mobiles is actually 112, but that's okay.
No, not in America.
No.
It's international. Because you can actually call 112 without a SIM in your phone. Yeah, I believe you can call 112 without a SIM in your phone.
I thought it was trouble.
Yeah, Gary had a
call 911 without a SIM.
Yeah, I've been using the iPhone for probably about a year and a half now, and I probably wouldn't trade it for anything else.
One of the things I have a big problem with the touchscreen. Yeah, one of the problems I have with the touchscreen, and this has been a constant problem for me, whether it be Windows Mobile or whether it was with the iThing, is that they're very difficult to use one-handed. Unless you're going to balance the device on your hand and belt it with your thumb, or put it on your thumb and belt it with your hand. So the one-handed use is very difficult. And if you haven't locked the screen and you brush 1 millimeter of that touch screen, odd things are going to happen. Button devices are more forgiving to be dumped in your pocket.
Thank God I'm not the only one, Kerry. This is something I've found very interesting, is I've found blind people tend to... be fairly polarized, I guess, on the issue of touch screens. Like, the people that use them swear by them and go, they're fine and they're wonderful and they're great, and then you get people like me that just go, ugh, yucky, and touch it with a barge pole.
I actually have an HTC Touch Pro 2 that runs Mobile Geo, and one of the problems is that to lock the screen, there is a menu that you can use to lock the screen, and you hold the button and you lock the screen, and then it says press key 1 to unlock, key 1 star, which you can't because you can't do that with Mobile Speak Pocket, so you can't unlock it. And it's very difficult when you're walking along not to touch that touch screen and make the thing do silly things. So to lock the screen in Mobile Speak, you triple tap the screen, but it's easy enough to triple tap the screen in your pocket to unlock it again. So I think we've still got a ways to go before touch screens become as good as reliable for road warrior use as the button interface. I love my iPod Touch too, but at least you can tap its power button and lock the touch screen.
I agree with all of those comments. Surprisingly, I don't feel like having to have to pay every time that Mobile Speak or something comes out with a new upgrade.
I am with you too, but that's a different issue altogether. I really like the iPod. I don't know how much I'd like it as a phone, because, as Aiden said, the SMS and tactile feedback is really, really useful when you want to do things quick. On the other hand, I'm a half-decent typist on the Touch. Really like it. Its Touch interface blows Mobile Speaks out of the water. It makes it very usable. But there is still definitely a place for the phones and the actual buttons and keypads.
You've got a Bluetooth keyboard as well, so you're kind of
a cheater. I do.
I have one of those too,
but I don't use it all the time.
That I can use too.
Something else I was going to say about the iPod screen, I think this is the case anyway, Dad was telling me this the other night, is that the touch screen works in a different way to previous touch screens, is that correct? As in, it doesn't use so much the pressure or the actual tap. I think it uses more in sort of an electromagnetic kind of thing or something, so like if you tap it with like the handle
it uses capacitance, I believe.
The handle of a teaspoon or something on an old touch phone that'd do stuff, whereas on the iPod it won't, which maybe Kerry would help with what you were saying about pocket problems and stuff.
I'm not exactly sure what technology. It's either heat or capacitance. I'd have to look it up. But you can actually trigger the touch screen without actually touching it. You can actually bring your finger to within a millimeter of the touch screen without even tapping it on the iThing, and it will actually activate a touch gesture. You don't actually have to make contact with the screen.
I cannot get it to do this.
I can.
That's because I'm just really uncoordinated, and once my finger's that millimeter away, it's going on the screen, whether I like it or not. So,
anybody know what technology they use definitively, or will we have to look it up? Okay, we'll look it up.
I've seen it before, Grace. It happens. It's interesting.
Oh, I've seen people do it. I can't get it to work though. Okay, yeah, no. It'll be really interesting to see where touchscreen technology goes. I really think that if they get the haptic technology with the I really think if they get the haptic technology going with the buttons that you can actually feel haptic. On the touchscreen, haptic, is it?
Okay. Yeah.
That will be really, really neat and will make touchscreens so much more usable than they are now.
The other problem with touchscreens, if you're low vision, is that they are very difficult to read in high lighting conditions. Due to the polarizing filters, if you look at them on the wrong angle, they are almost illegible. This is improving, but it is still a challenge to read a touchscreen in direct sunlight.
Okay, we'll move on.
I'm just
laptops.
A purist, I guess, and I enjoy having a keypad.
Oh,
and
so
if I want to
I.
type, I'll get a Bluetooth. Yeah.
But the iPods like are so easy to use. Got a keyboard or no keyboard. Except for typing.
Okay, onwards and downwards.
Okay. Laptops are all different. They all look different. They've made by different brands. They may have things in different places on the actual laptop. Here are some common features that are common to all laptops. They're small and portable. They have an integrated display screen in the lid. They have an integrated keyboard in the base. They run on AC power or a rechargeable battery. They support hot swappable drives and peripherals. They can use docking stations and port replicators to connect peripherals. Other than that, you're on your own, and they can be quite different sizes, sometimes a little bit different shape. Laptops and desktops use the same external ports, such as USB, VGA, and sound. They also have express or PC card slots for extra memory or peripherals, such as a modem. If you actually wanted to get a modem on a new laptop, they usually don't come with one, so you'd stick an express card into the side of your laptop that has a modem on it, and there you go. You've got dial-up internet. Okay, we're going to go over the different views of a laptop. If you've ever read a manual of a note taker or a tape player, it's kind of like that. So we're going to talk about what components are actually possibly where on a laptop and what they look like.
Place the device on a desk in front of you with the opening edge towards you. Okay, on we go.
This stuff, if you need to review it again, is in diagrams in this chapter. And if you have any questions about any of this, stop and ask me. All right. We're going to start from the top. The top of it might have some LEDs. They might have Bluetooth LEDs, a battery LED, and a standby LED. They can be on top of the laptop. The Bluetooth status indicates when the Bluetooth transceiver is enabled. Do we all know what Bluetooth is?
Apart from the fact it was named after a Viking king, anybody know what Bluetooth is?
I didn't know that. It's a radio thing, isn't it? Like
yes.
It transmits stuff over radio, a radio wave.
802.15, personal area network, range 1 to 10 meters. Can't remember.
It can go up to 30, actually.
Sure it's not 30 feet?
33. I believe it's 30. It can, depending if you have...
I think Bluetooth 2 is 30 meters.
Yep.
Okay, Bluetooth 2 is 30 meters, and then you've got those dongles that claim 100 meters, which probably violate all transmission standards there are.
Yeah, that's probably going to irradiate you. But hey.
It is the same frequency that you use to warm your coffee up, so be aware of that. It just isn't enough watts. Yeah, now we thought...
Yeah, for Bluetooth 1...
For Bluetooth 2, they've increased 1. It to 30 meters, we believe. But 1 and 1.1 was 10 meters.
The battery status LED indicates the condition of the computer battery, either by colors or different amounts of lights.
In JAWS, people, JAWS key shift B will give you your battery status. A lot of people don't know that.
Of course, we remember that a computer can use batteries or AC power to operate. The type of battery and how the laptop is used affect the battery charge.
Thank you. Insert Q for query battery.
So, your battery is going to last a lot longer if you turn, say, Bluetooth off and Wi-Fi off, and even disable your webcam. if you have all those on, you might get a couple hours less battery time than if they were all off.
There's another handy hint. If you go into the advanced properties of your Realtek network card, if you have one on your notebook, and turn on PCIe power saving and auto disable PHY, it will actually shut down the transceiver when a network cable isn't plugged in, and that'll save you even more battery. That is Realtek specific. There may be advanced settings on other cards that you can do that on as well.
Also, actually have your you can also have your screen dim after 1 minute, and this always used to annoy to no end my poor programming instructor when I attempted to take a programming course, because he'd be looking at my computer and reading down the screen, and the screen would just suddenly switch off after a minute, and we'd have to press a key to bring it back up again. So you might want to make it a little bit longer time if you're working with someone sighted. If not, hey, 1 minute's good on battery. It'll just dim when you're not touching it and come right back when you're ready to use it.
Has anybody noticed that if you're listening to something though and the screen goes dim, the audio goes while the screen goes dim?
No, mine never did that.
Yeah, mine does that. A few of my netbooks do that. When the screen goes blank, there's a little hiccup in the audio.
Can you even tell the monitor to turn off?
No. Would that be useful? On some computers you can.
Some you can. Mine's got an FNF7 key that will just kill the screen altogether, just shuts it down. Some of them you can't actually turn the screen off. You actually have to put in a dummy VGA adapter and then flick the screen out to the dummy loopback adapter, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. And then if you're William Taylor and you don't want the screen to work at all, you actually unscrew the bezel on your screen, voiding any warranty that you may have had, and you disconnect the cold cathode backlight. That will tend to turn the screen off as well.
Fair enough. And I'm sure in my power options I've got, there's a dim monitor after box, and then there's a, I can't remember what it's called, turn monitor off or stop monitor or something, a box just straight underneath it.
Yeah, well that'll just make it completely turn off and go blank, and then you'll actually have to, it'll come all the way back up.
Yeah. It differs between the laptops and what they can do depending on what sort of video card and what sort of flat panel and stuff you're dealing with. But keep in mind that the options will vary depending on what you've got. But yeah, having the screen... The other thing to keep in mind also, and this is something that a lot of blind people aren't aware of, is that when you plug AC power into a laptop, a screen gets much, much brighter than it would have on battery. So that can allow people standing further back to read it.
Uh-huh.
Also note that there's two different power schemes in, or different settings, sections for power settings. One for when it's on AC power and one
we'll
when it's
not. Yeah, we'll talk about power settings later, so we'll get there.
Standby and all that fun stuff. It's absolutely amazingly fun. We've got the standby LED that indicates if the laptop is on standby. Standby modes reduce the amount of electricity used by the laptop by shutting off the monitor, hard drives, and CPU. A small amount of electricity is used to keep the RAM active and to make data available. So as soon as you touch that computer, it's going to come right out of standby. Everything's going to come right back up almost instantly, and there you go, your computer's back.
Well, graces will come up if you sneeze at it.
Yeah, basically, you look at that thing wrong, it's coming up. A laptop computer may enter standby mode when it has not been used for a predetermined amount of time. You can set this in your power schemes. Mine's 15 minutes, and if I don't touch it for 3 hours, it will go ahead and hibernate for me.
I have never seen it do this, ever, but the settings are set, and if anything happens, like quitter or whatever, no, it's awake again. So keep in mind that things will keep your machines awake. Also, as everybody on this channel will know, adaptive technology greatly reduces your odds of coming out of standby unscathed. I've seen sighted people use standby for years with no problems, but if you use adaptive technology, 9 times out of 10 you'll come out of it okay, but it's the time when you're in a real hurry and wanting to start that presentation that things will not go as well as you thought when it all comes out because the sound card didn't wake up in time. Or something didn't happen in the right order.
I've found that if you're using a Braille display, that's a huge problem. Not so much with JAWS 11. JAWS 11 has really fixed up the standby issues with speech. Braille display, you're on your own.
Lucky for you, Grace. God, my old machine with JAWS 7 used to come out of standby like a dream every single time, but this one I just can't make it work. Now I just turn the thing off.
The other thing to keep in mind with standby, and Grace learnt this the hard way when she first came over here, was when you put netbooks into standby, they've probably got about a day or two in their batteries before their batteries are dead flat. And because of the RAM refresh, standby will siphon your battery off fairly quickly. So be aware of that. The original EPC-701s would only last 8.5 to 9 hours in standby before they were as flat as a tack.
So I'd be pulling these things out of my backpack a week later and wondering why they were completely dead. Okay, we're going to go on to the rear of the computer.
I'm going to talk about hibernate.
No, we're not there yet. We're actually going to talk about all of the power modes. But we're just talking about the LED, and so we have a little bit of information on standby.
Yeah, right.
Okay, what we've got is possibly a parallel port. You're probably not going to see too many more of these parallel ports. What would you use a parallel port, though, for if you had it?
Possibly a printer or an old Braille display.
Yes, absolutely. Printer, Braille display, scanner. Good job.
Dongle.
Dongle.
Embosser.
Embosser.
Yeah, oh, absolutely an embosser.
Data transfer.
Very few USB embossers. They're coming finally, but very few.
Oh, I know. It's so good. The AC power connector is a connector that is used to attach the AC power adapter to a laptop and charge the battery. You can also completely take the battery out of your machine and run it purely on AC power if that's something you really want to do.
Sometimes. Not every machine will do that, so do try it because some...
Most machines will.
Yeah, some...
95% of them will do it now.
Not if you got the cheap charger off eBay that can't quite provide enough amps to actually run the box. And that is something you need to be aware of. You do put a lot of load on your charger, and I don't know if anybody's noticed, but some of those chargers, when they're running a machine or when they're charging a battery, the actual packs can get quite hot. So don't stack it under a coat or a pile of clothes or something.
Or the laptop bag.
The battery bay is a connector that is used to attach laptop batteries. Remember, every laptop battery bay is different. And every laptop battery is different. If you're going to buy a new battery, you want to make sure that it is compatible with your laptop because nobody standardizes these things. On the left side of the laptop, we have a security keyhole. It used to be called Kensington locks. This is a hard point in the laptop frame that is used to attach a security cable. You take the security cable, you loop it around a desk leg or something of that sort, and you can lock that laptop to something so it doesn't walk away on you. We've got USB ports, and we have talked about those used to connect peripherals. We've got an S-Video connector. It is a 4-pin mini DIN connector, so a little bit smaller than and you might think that the keyboard connector can actually go in here, but it can't. This is used to output video signals to a compatible device.
If anybody's ever tried to get S-Video in either the 4-pin or the 7-pin configuration to go to a television, you'll know what I'm talking about. If the television doesn't have S-Video in, don't bother, and if you can actually get the converter cables, good luck. It was a very difficult thing to get to fly.
Is that the HDMI thing that looks like a USB but isn't that I've got on my machine?
That's different.
No.
That's a newer standard.
It's a DIN. It feels a lot like a MIDI cable or...
It feels like a little round keyboard cable hole, but it isn't.
Yeah.
As in PS2 keyboard connector.
Yeah. I know the one you mean. I don't think I've got one on that.
I had an S-Video in on my TV. I didn't realize it'd be a problem because I thought it would be pretty simple. I never bothered, but I used to have.
There's two different standards for it, and one of them carries audio, and the other doesn't. And
yeah, of course there are.
Yuck. We've got an RJ11 modem port, if you're lucky, that is used to connect a laptop to a standard telephone line. The modem can be used to connect the computer to the internet, fax documents, and answer incoming calls. Ethernet, RJ45...
Fax documents. So I just want to make a point on that. Fax documents. A lot of people say, I can't send a fax because I don't have a fax. If you have a fax modem, you have a fax. Quartzmile and your fax modem, or there is actually other cheaper fax software that you can get that if you don't own Quartzmile that will fax stuff out quite nicely. So a lot of people say, I can't send a fax. Not quite true. If you do have a fax modem, you can certainly send a fax, and sometimes it's necessary.
And the other thing you can do is actually use internet to fax. There are places on the internet that will send out a fax for you.
Can you use a USB?
Can you download a program that'll fax
USB
over the
fax modems?
Yeah, there are USB fax modems.
You don't necessarily need a program. You just usually, I've used with a service once. I think it's called FreeFax or GoFreeFax or something. And yeah, you just upload the file, email it to them or something, and it will do it.
It's good.
Email to fax gateways are also very popular.
If you want your own fax number, would you need a modem for that, or is there a program you can get that will give you one?
There's a program that can do it and send it to your email as PDFs on the internet. You can go look up fax by email or fax by internet on Google, and you'll find all sorts of people that will be willing to do that for you.
I believe there's even a service to fax over Skype.
Okay, we've got Ethernet RJ45 ports, and this is your typical network cable connecting you to a local area network. Next to these are two network LEDs. These indicate the status of the network connection. There's a green link light that indicates the network connectivity, and another LED light might be there that indicates traffic to and from the laptop. Stereo headphone jack. Well, we know what this is. Probably accompanied by a microphone jack, unless it isn't, and you only get one jack to choose from. You may also have a line-in jack.
A lot of people would wish you had a line-in jack. And in fact, if you're lucky enough to have one, be very happy, because a lot of people don't have one. And running a microphone at low level does not usually equate to a line-in when you're working on a laptop, especially because the mic provides plug-in power.
More importantly, running a line-in at high power does not cut it.
You'll also probably have... go ahead.
Oh, nothing. Just like Drew was saying, you can't run a mic at high power to line in, and that doesn't work.
We have a ventilation grill. It's a series of vents that allow hot air to be expelled from the interior of the laptop. You also probably have some of these on the bottom or back as well.
Warning, danger, Will Robinson, TM. Do not put your laptop on a bed, on a couch, on a carpeted floor, because it will not be able to draw air in and it will overheat. I actually fixed a laptop about 3 or 4 weeks ago that had a drive that actually had a smart overheat alert on the smart status, which is selective monitoring and reporting technology. And I rang them up and said, did you put this on your bed? And he said, yes, I did. And I said, well, you actually caused the laptop to exceed 60 degrees centigrade and it's not happy. So just be careful of where your intake vents are and where your output vents are. I recommend people getting a chopping board or something else flat and sturdy to put their laptop on if they're going to rest it on a bed or a couch or something similar. And it's just too easy to drop your netbook down on the couch or the bed and leave it turned on and have it cook.
I actually have a cutting board in my house.
I'm bad about that.
I'm bad. I have the netbook on my bed right now, but I have it. I'm sort of good because I have it resting on its monitor. I have it tilted vertical.
No, that's not any better.
That's going to actually put some strain on your monitor and hurt the hinges.
Why do they feel the need to put the intake vents on the bottom all the time? So it seems very
foolish. Because that's the only place they can fit them?
You can put them on the side, but see, they don't want the vents on the top because things can fall into the laptop. Also, the intake vents are meant to pull in cold air underneath the laptop, and the sun doesn't usually shine under the laptop unless you're using it upside down on your back in the summer, which isn't very popular as far as laptops are concerned. So the underside of the laptop is likely to be cool because it's not in the sunlight or the direct heat or whatever.
Another thing, we were talking about audio jacks, and I want to mention, since we're talking about physical things, there are some laptops where the audio jacks are on the front. Be careful, because if you do what I did, you have a patch cord going from the front of your laptop to something else. Actually, this wasn't mine, and I don't remember if I did it or if he did. Fell over the patch cord, causing the jack to come unsoldered from the motherboard and requiring replacement of the motherboard. Be careful with audio jacks in laptops. They can be very delicate. And guess what? When it's the headphone jack, you can lose your speakers and your sound, too. And
yeah, it's all
the manufacturers
gone.
Don't really care if your monitor doesn't work. They're not very apt to fix it. They'll just say, oh, get a USB headset. They don't understand that for us, sound is like having the screen go. So be careful.
Okay, next to the vents, we'll have a PC combo expansion slot. The PC combination card slot is an expansion slot that supports the Express card expansion cards in the laptop slot and PC cards in the bottom slot, possibly. Usually, on most laptops I've seen, you only get one slot for the... usually it's the... I think it's more the Express cards that they're using now, am I right, Carrie? They're using more of the Express cards than the PC cards now?
PC cards aren't really popular. So, yeah, you tend to find more Express card stuff. But, in fact, Apple has gotten rid of the Express cards out of their netbooks, and they're just putting card readers in because they're more popular.
Fair enough. And a lot of laptops now will also have a SD card slot on the side, which is very nice. Okay, on the front of the laptop, you will find an infrared port. This is a line-of-sight wireless transceiver that is used for data transmission. Hey, in one of your tests, not this one, but a later one. So they have to be lined up with each other, and they can't be more than a meter away, that is 3 feet. You'll have speakers. They're an output device that converts audio signal, of course. You'll have a laptop latch. The laptop latch is a lever that is used to open the laptop lid, of course. And you might have more ventilation underneath the front part of the laptop, and that's going to expel air from the laptop.
The Macs have a magnetic thing that holds the laptop shut.
Yeah, those are very cool. They just clip shut.
That's the MagSafe TM connector, and we'd better acknowledge the TM, which is a trademark of Apple, lest they come after us, okay? MagSafe TM.
The one that holds the lid shut.
Oh, that's only for the cheaper MacBook Pros. The more expensive ones actually have a clip latch, because I had a MacBook, and it's got the magnet one. And then the newer MacBooks...
You could pay $2,000 for it, so I don't...
Yeah, the newer ones now have the magnets as well. That hold the lid shut. Mine actually has a clip mechanism, so it just depends on which MacBook you've got as to whether it's got the clip or the magnets.
Be careful when putting SD cards into laptops that you put them in the right way. I almost got one stuck in said MacBook.
Alright. You've got a disk drive possibly on the right side of your notebook along with the activity indicator LED for that.
Sometimes they're at the front as well, which can be a problem, because you've actually got to push yourself back from the desk to open your CD drawer. One of the other things I'd warn people about laptop CD-ROM drives and CD burners and stuff is they don't stand up to a lot of use. I wouldn't use them unless you absolutely have to. I'd get some sort of external drive because it's quite expensive to replace the internal DVD/CD read-writey thing in your laptop.
Even the ones that slide out are expensive. Even if you're like mine where they design it to... Yeah, they're $80 for that.
Yeah. And the ones in your laptop may not be as fast as you'd like, so the external ones can be slim and pretty fast, and usually quite nice.
Another thing that you should never do, and everybody does it, is don't leave CDs in the drive that's in your laptop, because they can rattle around and you can actually damage the laser and lens assembly.
You have a drive bay status indicator, and this is a LED that illuminates when a drive is installed in the bay, and often there's one also that will show it when it's busy. A VGA port is a 15-pin socket that connects external displays and projectors. On the bottom of the laptop, we have a docking station connector that will allow you to connect up to a docking station. You probably have two battery latches to ensure that your battery is held in place when it's inside of the laptop. A RAM access panel, it will have a screw in it. You will unscrew it and pull off the cover to install more RAM. And also, you may have a hard drive access panel. that will allow you to unscrew another panel and get to the hard drive bay. One thing to note, if you've actually had someone else go and install these things in there, you just really better hope that they don't strip the screws, or you are never getting those doors off.
Also, be aware that some netbooks do not have hard disk bays, that you can get at the hard disks. You don't want to know the grief that you have to go through to get an Acer Aspire 1, at least the older generations apart. Basically, you have to pull all of the screws out of the back of it and then poke a screwdriver through a hole and nudge the keyboard out of the way before you can get at the other parts. It's particularly nasty. If you're going to get a netbook and you have the eye to upgrade it to, say, 2 gig of RAM and a 500 gig hard drive, make sure it's one of the models that won't take you 3 to 4 hours of very careful disassembly, which will void your warranty, by the way. Upgrading RAM in them with the RAM door, however, has been legally proven that it will not void your warranty, at least if it's an ASUS.
Okay, there's a diagram here about batteries. The only battery I'm really going to go over today is the one that is mainly in our laptops. This is the lithium-ion battery. It's lightweight for power. There's no effect on memory, so you can have it charged or discharged as much as you like. It can easily overheat, so this is why we need to keep our laptops off the beds, because some of the older ones used to catch on fire. It was good.
Some of the newer ones can, too. Have a look for Exploding Battery on YouTube, and you'll find all sorts of videos where they deliberately set these things off, and they are like a mini bomb. They've got, like, flames pouring out of them. Very dangerous. Don't ever do it.
We want to charge the batteries as often. They don't hold their charge forever, a week or two at most, usually. Seek the freshest batteries, most recently manufactured, so don't buy old ones. These are used in cell phones and laptops, and you want to check with your local regulations for disposal procedures. Any questions that? And go ahead.
I was just going to say, with your talking about the what's where in a laptop thing, I was AFK at the time, but all of that too is very much... this is probably how it will be, or this may be how it will be. I've found, if you look at different machines, all those things
this
are
is a laptop
in different places.
A configuration. This is a laptop configuration that you could see. So it's just these could be on either side anywhere, but basically these are the things you will find.
We said that.
Yeah.
This is your sample laptop. A sample laptop only. Yours will and may vary incredibly from the sample laptop in the notes, okay? So if you haven't got that this is a sample laptop, we're sorry. But yes, we did actually make it very clear that this was the sample one in the diagram descriptions, in the notes, and it in no way recommended your laptop unless you happen to have the laptop that they're picturing. And if you do, good.
I have a laptop that's very similar to this because it's an HP, and this was an HP laptop that they're talking about. any questions about the laptop configuration or any of the ports on the outside of the laptop? Cool. All right. We've got many different input devices that can be used. Of course, input devices are devices used to input data into the computer. Laptops can use keyboards. They all do use keyboards and can use regular mice just like desktops can, but they also have input devices of their very own. You've got touchpads, which we'll talk about in a minute, styluses, which you can use to tap things on tablet PCs, and pens used to write or draw on a tablet. They also have little sensitive touch strips on the top that can be the bane of all of the blind people in the world's existence. Actually, I'm one of these people who really likes the touch strip on my HP notebook, which is quite odd.
Does yours turn your wireless off, though, if you touch the wrong bit?
No.
That's why she likes it. If there was a little bit that you touched that would turn your wireless off and would mute your audio and would turn your Bluetooth off, I think she would like it a lot less. She's just lucky enough to have an HP where swiping your finger across the top in a moment of boredom will not disconnect you from every network on the planet.
I have a that touch strip on mine, and the wireless is always off. You always have to turn it back on. Usually it's on mine, it's above F5.
Okay. I made sure that I had a hardware switch for wireless and Bluetooth. That was one of the things that I made sure I had. And we're going to talk about some of the things that you might want to check when you're buying a laptop after we're done looking at the inside of a laptop when we open the lid.
Hardware switches are becoming rarer and rarer. It's more software control these days. They still exist, but, for example, I've never seen a hardware switch on a netbook. I'm sure there are some, but they're pretty rare.
Even the switches that are, I've seen some on an Acer laptop, and they're all spring-loaded switches, so you don't know whether they're on or off.
Ooh, that's good.
Oh, come on, Aiden, you should just look at the lights.
Yeah, I'll send it to you by webcam. Carrie, you can do it.
Cool, no worries.
Okay, of course we've got a keyboard. They're much more compact. They have a multifunctional keys. In addition, they've got one key known as the function key. This is not usually on desktop keyboards. This key allows other keys to perform different functions than usual when the function key is held down. The feature that is accessed by pressing and holding the function key is printed on the other key in smaller font or a different color. There are several functions that can be accessed: volume settings, display brightness, sleep states, wireless functionality, checking battery status. The function key must not be confused with the function keys F1 through F12. To find out what your function key does, I found if you go to the website and get the manual for your computer, they'll often have a little table that tells you what all of these keys do. You memorize this, and you're off and running.
Be careful, however, some laptops require the driver software to be installed to have the function key, all of the functionality working. I don't want to say that three times this morning. So basically what will happen is if you don't have the drivers or the software installed, a lot of the function key combinations will not take effect. One of the other problems I had with the function key is if you are mucking around the keyboard trying to figure out what they all do, usually one of them will kill off your audio, and in really bad situations, pressing that same key again will not bring it back.
Yeah, the netbook, I believe, is like that. Interestingly for us blindies, Michael Fair does blog posts. I found my netbook's function table from Michael Fair's blog, which I found was an interesting resource. But yeah, another interesting note about keyboards: in different countries, they can be different setups. A friend bought a Canadian laptop and said that all laptop keyboards in Canada are required to have certain French accent keys and things like that.
Oh, really? Oh, fair enough.
I
actually used a keyboard the other day that a friend of mine had bought in the UK, and Shift-3 gave me a pound sign. An actual pound sign, not a hash mark. That was Asenia's laptop that I was fixing. It was actually a British layout, and the double quotes are over on the right-hand side where the apostrophe would normally be. No, the double quotes are on the 2 key. The Shift-2 will give you the double quotes, was the British layout.
Instead of at,
yeah.
Oh, quite odd. I just set mine to English US and I'm done with it.
That doesn't work because the keys are actually slightly differently laid out physically on this particular one.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, another thing that is absolutely mind-boggling that I learned was that the function key, the F1 through F12, can be used in 7 different ways, each key, because they can be used with Control, Shift, and Alt, and any combination thereof. So I thought that was really interesting, and you may have seen it in your notes, but if you haven't, I just thought I should share that with you.
If the concept of it scares you, it probably should. And one of the newest problems that people have learning how to use computers is exactly what incantation of what keys makes their adaptive technology do what. Go ahead, Aiden.
Yeah, one problem I have with my netbook is the scroll lock is the function, I believe it's F12. No, I believe, or, yeah, no, yeah, I think it's the function F12. So, in JAWS 10, trying to bring up who last signed on with Windows Messenger, which is control scroll lock F12, doesn't work.
No, that wouldn't work.
Another thing was, it's a good idea, actually, if you have a laptop with a strange key that you think is a function key, to check out your manual, especially for the blind, because one of the function keys will usually do something interesting with your display. Switch it to internal, external, or just external, which would save you a lot of battery power.
If you can get that to work, that is an awesome thing. Ooh, whoa.
Sorry, the other point I was going to make also is that, and this is true for desktops. Grace is having an energy drink as well, can't you tell? The desktop key and the laptops, if you're using Intel graphics hardware, Control and Alt and the arrow keys, which are functional under WindowEyes, will flick your screen around all of the different orientations. So don't be surprised if somebody sighted comes up and goes, "Ah, your screen's upside down." That can be disabled under the Intel control panel utility. Oh, yeah.
There is one other thing that you should be aware of with function keys. If you're using a netbook, your function key will also allow you to... thank you, Chris. Yeah. Okay. If you
Can
want
you
page
share?
Up, page down, home, and end. Oh, of course I would. You're gonna hold down your function key and use your arrows to actually emulate the page up, page down, home, and end.
Most of the time, not all netbooks do that.
Don't a lot of netbooks have more than one function key as well? I've seen.
Yes, most of the time they'll have one on each side.
Function keys. I saw one with, like, three.
Sometimes you can. Left and right function keys are pretty common. I find it quite ironic that often you have a left alt, a left right alt, a left and right function key, but you don't have a left and right control key, for example, or an oddity like that.
Another thing that we have on our computers, our laptops, is a touchpad. It has a left and right click button and a pointer control. And you run your fingers along it to emulate a mouse and move around your screen. These are terrible if you are blind because you don't really want to use them and you bump them with your hand or arm and you move to a completely different window. Many laptops that I've seen actually have a button where you can turn this off or you can disable it in the control panel. You can also have a fingerprint reader, a hard volume control, or a touch strip that will do your volume control for you, a power button, which you know what that's all about, and that's about it. We've got various LEDs on the keyboard. Another wireless LED might be there. You will have possibly another Bluetooth indicator. You'll also have a numlock LED, so you'll have a light to tell if numlock's on or off. Not very helpful. You also have one for caps lock. And that's also very much not helpful. You'll have a power light letting you know... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of numlock, that the function key, or as in sometimes it's called the FN key, and letters often act as a number pad on the netbooks.
They do. And the layout of the number pad varies depending on the type of netbook. Some of them will have the numpad minus on the P, and some of them will have the numpad minus somewhere else. So generally the number pad is situated around the I key with the FN key held down. However, the locations of the plus, dash, star, and slash keys may vary. What happened where?
Playing in tune with that is interesting.
Ah, Grace just got kicked from the server. I didn't do it. Everybody else still hear me, okay?
Are they on the same cable?
Are you on wired or wireless?
I'm on Wi-Fi, I think, actually. And so is Meredith, so that would make sense why we both got booted.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't recommend the Wi-Fi if you're lecturing, but it's all good. We'll get you a cable next week.
Okay, as I was saying, we've got the power on LED. It indicates whether your laptop's on or off. At battery status, as we said, another one that can indicate the condition of the battery. And you also will have standby and hibernation modes to tell you if it's on, if it's in standby, or possibly hibernating. Something else that is not actually very apparent, especially to us blind people, on many laptops there's a small pin on the laptop cover that contacts a switch in the case when the case is closed. This is called an LCD cutoff switch. The LCD cutoff switch tells the CPU to conserve power by extinguishing the backlight and turning off the LCD. If this switch breaks or is dirty, your LCD might be dark because it won't realize that it needs to turn it back on. If this happens, you need to carefully clean the switch to restore it to normal operation, hopefully.
It's also a heat issue if you have the screen closed and the laptop on. Sometimes you can actually get certain brands of laptop that sweat a lot of their heat out through the keyboard, and having the screen closed is a bad idea, and having the light on in the screen is an even worse idea.
Oh, no. Ah, should be.
Kind of. You're popping and crackling and very quiet.
Mic connection issue.
She's got a...
I've got a really good mic, actually. It should work fine.
Yeah, but you're drinking energy drink, so you moved it. There you go, you're back now.
There we go. All right. So, I've got some suggestions for things that we might want to check when we buy laptops. Definitely find out if it has a touch strip on the top and what functions are actually controlled by that touch strip. If you can get a laptop with a button to turn off the touchpad, do it, because that is really convenient. If you can get a laptop with a microphone and headphone jack that is separate, you definitely want that. Because if you don't have that, you can only plug in one or the other. So you're forced to use...
We're not sure about that. It may work with iPod headphones because of the four-ring design. We'd have to try that later. Sean was asking that earlier.
Yeah, that's a good point. Otherwise, you'd have to use a USB headset. Can anyone else think of things you might want to check? Definitely the keyboard, to make sure it's a keyboard that you actually really want to type on and can find everything on.
Quality of the speakers is a big blindy no-no. If the speakers aren't any good, a lot of people won't like the speakers. How good does the microphone sound exactly? How heavy is it? Does it fit in your back pocket or your backpack, depending on how big the thing is? The other thing I was going to point out is a lot of laptops don't have a button to turn the touchpad on-off. However, the Synaptics touchpad utility often lets you toggle it on and off with FNF9, which has worked on an incredible number of laptops that I've used. So if you can't turn your touchpad off by any other means, perhaps try FNF9. It might do something else horrible, though, so your mileage may vary.
And I was going to say about mics, sometimes you can get really good. My friend got a Dell, and the mic on that was crystal clear. I could hear another guy talking in the kitchen. Sean can attest
to the new Dell internal mics are fantastic.
Yeah. I guess that's one way Dell's excelled.
The other thing is a lot of the new netbooks and stuff now actually have stereo microphones, so there's actually a pinhole for the microphone on each side of your screen, and that will give left and right separation for utilities such as TeamTalk, demonstrated by the venerable Drew in the Thursday Chats area of our server, where you can actually use stereo, which may interest people who want that sort of positional stuff.
That'd be awesome. Something else that's worth checking when you're buying a laptop is, as Kerry said, they're becoming rarer and rarer, but the switch to turn off and on the wireless / Bluetooth and stuff, because I had one on my old machine and I found it was a dream. It was very, very cool to just be able to go flick and it was gone. Whereas now I need to actually go in and flick it off in the settings somewhere.
Hardware volume buttons are also something, if you can find, that you might want to look.
Sorry, what was that, Sean?
If you can find them.
Hardware volume. A lot of them will be controlled by software. Again, if you look at your manual, by your FNF keys.
And some of them will actually be...
They still controlled it by software, but they were buttons you could physically hit. The problem is with them using FN and stuff, if you all of a sudden get something real loud, it can be if you're scrambling to try and figure out how do I turn it down.
Which is why Power Mixer is such a good thing to go and purchase, and it has hotkeys that will mute that down before your housemates come and attack you. You can also have problems with some of the volume wheels actually aren't a real variable resistor. They're just a spinny wheel that turn it up and down, a bit like those stereo systems that have those flick up and flick down dials that turn the volume up and down that are sort of spring-loaded and evil.
Another thing,
try and avoid that switch, Grace, because it sort of goes on the recording.
Another thing that you might actually want to check is what type of card slots it has. You might want an SD card slot, and a lot of them come with it, but you don't want to get the one laptop that doesn't.
Also, some netbooks have SD card slots, quite a number of them, where the SD card actually juts out from the netbook once inserted, and that means that you cannot leave the SD card in the netbook, whereas some have an SD card where the card is actually flush with the edge of the notebook. So that's another thing to be aware of.
And make sure we put them in properly.
Absolutely, or else we might have trouble. If it doesn't fit, don't force it in. When you're putting an SD card in, it should click and kind of go in. If it doesn't do that, then you do not have it in the right way. Take it out, flip it over, and put it in the other way. Okay, any questions on laptop layouts and design and all of that good stuff before we go on to docking stations?
One more comment, if I may. A lot of machines also have other buttons. I've seen them do various things. Some of them, sometimes you'll have buttons to control your projector or just not like just normal display mode. Other ones have buttons to control your media player of choice. And my old one had other buttons that I can't remember what they did, but it was something quite strange and unexpected. And actually very bad for Jaws. These buttons were either on the front of the machine on the side or up next to your power button.
Remember the old satellite Toshiba? I was going to say, the Toshiba satellite we had that we had a few years back actually had a mode where you could hold a couple of buttons down and the thing would turn into a CD player. It was kind of cute.
Yeah, I had a Toshiba where there was a switch on the front and you flick that, and if it was off, it would turn on, open your media player, and play the last song that your media player had loaded, which I found kind of frightening when I first started, a little bit shocking. But it was kind of neat afterwards. I was going to say something else about buttons. Laptops, I'll think about it in a minute.
Oh, well. Another thing that can come with some of your computers is a little express card remote. And it'll live in your express card slot, and you've got
That's
this little remote that can pop
say.
Out and control your media with that. And those are kind of cool and kind of interesting to play with as well.
I have never seen...
Yeah,
My HP does.
One of my students' laptop has that. I thought, this is a card. Pops it out, and a friggin' remote comes out. How do those usually work? Are they infrared?
I believe so. I think so. I don't know.
Depends on the laptop. They usually are infrared, although they can be other technologies. And they are controlled. They're much more widely supported in Windows 7. They were sort of gaining support in Vista, but there is actually a remote control standard that Microsoft has somehow managed to hoist on the industry, and now the controls are a bit more standard and have similar functions and stuff inbuilt into the operating system.
Yeah, they look like tiny, tiny flat TV remotes. They've basically got a number pad and a bunch of function buttons. They're kind of neat to see, actually.
Yeah, they got these little bubbly things. They're odd.
They're technically called credit card remotes.
Nice. Now, why couldn't they be Bluetooth?
And I think some of them might be. I'm not sure. But the other thing that's very nice about these is if you get into a situation where you've somehow muted yourself, these usually have a mute-unmute button, and you can rescue yourself using this. Another way to rescue yourself from the touchpad mute problem is to plug in a USB sound card and go into the device or to sounds and audio devices and uncheck the mute button, because usually you're able to do that.
Or use a braille display if you happen to be lucky enough to have one.
Rich enough.
Or an external speech synthesizer if you're even luckier enough to have one of those.
Wow. Absolutely.
Oof, yeah, those things are old. I just gave a friend a DeckTalk Express so he could play with it in Linux a while ago.
Wow.
You'll probably never get it back.
Okay. No, that's
I wouldn't
really
give it
nice.
Yeah, right. No, no kidding.
Well, I had one and the power adapter broke off in the... But I had one and, oh my god. I have an accent as a...
Got one somewhere too. I don't know what happened to it. Anyway, moving
worst
on.
Worst comes to worst, I use my brain on speak.
Yeah. A base station is a device that attaches to AC power and to desktop peripherals. This gives you access to power and more peripherals than are included on your laptop. For example, USB ports, more of them, maybe a modem, a CD burner that might work a lot better than the one you've got in there. Possibly you can stick in an extra external hard drive or an internal hard drive. It'll have just a drive bay for you to use.
No, they've changed the terminology.
They changed the terminology. Docking station is a subset of base station. There are two types of base stations. These are docking stations, which have more ports, drive bays, speakers, and PCI slots, possibly. And a port replicator is the second type of base station. This is smaller and basically gives you access to more ports such as USB, network, parallel, VGA, and FireWire. Base stations can be connected via specialized connectors, say the docking connector on the bottom of your laptop. These are not standardized, so it could be any type of docking connector made by your manufacturer, USB, FireWire, or through a card slot. Docking stations will usually have a power button that can turns on and off the power to the laptop when the laptop is connected to the docking station. An eject button. Listen carefully. The eject button is a lever that releases the laptop from the docking station so that the laptop can be removed. This is a question in one of your worksheets, and it's kind of a trick question, so that is why I say. Remember that.
The other thing is you must actually tell the software to eject from the docking station before you press the lever. Otherwise, all sorts of peripherals will disappear in the middle of your laptop using them.
You've got the docking connector. This is a socket that
Does
is
that
used
come
to
up
attach
and
the laptop.
Remove hardware?
Yeah.
Depends.
Specialized programs as well.
Sometimes it will come up on the start menu on that little toolbar, like on XP, Louis would say, right where it would say shut down your computer, one of those buttons was undock your computer. That was on a Dell Latitude D8.
Okay, and on the back of the display, or of the docking station, you've got an exhaust vent, and this is another fan vent, because your fan vents are now covered up by the docking station, so it has to have more fan vents. Port replicators might not necessarily have fans. AC power connector. The AC power connector is a socket used to connect AC power to the actual docking station, which in turn provides power to your computer. You'll have a PC card or express card slot, and because your other one may actually be covered up. You'll have a VGA port to connect to an external monitor. Some docking stations actually have a monitor built in sometimes, if you get a really, really... DVI ports, a socket that is used to attach digital video monitors. You'll have a line-in connector, so phones, microphone, lots more USB ports than you would on your regular computer. That's part of the point. You'll have a real mouse and keyboard port. Your docking station might actually come with a keyboard. You might have a external drive bay so that you can slide a drive into it, and that drive will now show up on your computer. And possibly a serial port, parallel ports, modem ports, an RJ45 port, and Just basically lots and lots of connectors. On the right side, you may have a key lock so that you can secure your laptop to the docking station. And as with the other examples of laptops, this docking station is only a sample docking station. Yours may look completely different. So does anyone have any questions on the differences between port replicators and docking stations?
Do you mean, so the difference is that what a docking station does more, generally?
A docking station does more, has more things. It might have speakers. It can possibly have a keyboard, connects more, and a port replicator is smaller and does mainly ports.
Alrighty.
You get to do a whole worksheet.
Is the laptop
sheet
more likely to sit in a docking station than on a,
yes,
like, wouldn't the
absolutely
port replicator kind of hook to a port or with a cable, but it won't actually...
Possibly. Some of them actually do sit on them now, but the docking station is more likely to have the laptop sit on it. Okay. We talk about the differences between desktops and laptops.
How much have we got left? We've got 11 minutes, by the way.
Quite a bit. Not, like, too much, but we'll finish it up next week. Do you want me to stop here, guys?
We should probably try and press on just...
Okay, keep going.
Okay. You've got the outside, the peripherals on the outside of a laptop and desktop, the USBs and firewires, are all quite a bit the same. Not so much on the inside of a laptop and desktop. Desktops components are usually standardized to a form factor. Laptops are as much smaller components, and they're always racing to figure out the most efficient way for these small components to run, so they are not standardized. You find that all the motherboards are proprietary. They can vary from brand to brand and model to model, so there's no real form factor for laptops. So you have to make very sure that when you're buying components that they will work inside of your laptop.
In fact, there are two different thicknesses of laptop drives, 9 and 12 mil, and if you get the wrong one, it won't fit.
Oh, and I guess that affects what external cases you could put them in as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, that's something I didn't know.
The focus is not to standardize them. It's to make them more efficient, able to use less power, put off less heat, and be much more compact. So they are not going to fit exactly in other manufacturers' laptops. You may have to obtain certifications for each laptop manufacturer that you support. So just be aware of that. They have some people that are HP laptop certified or Apple laptop certified, and that is something that you may have to do, or you may have that, someone in that store may have that certification, so you may not have to.
Interesting story, just because it's mildly humorous. We went into a laptop store to upgrade the RAM in my ex-wife's laptop, and she burst into tears when the man behind the counter was actually going to install the RAM because she didn't want the strange man working on her laptop. She wanted me working on the laptop, but I had to explain to her that it was a warranty issue and that the guy actually had to do the RAM replacement. So that was an interesting situation. Quite a number of years ago now.
Sure enough.
Okay, so we have different memory in laptops than in desktops. They use small outline dual inline memory modules, or SODIMs. And they have some of these described in Module 3. They look like little shrink-wrapped DIMMs that have been basically done by a shrink ray. And they are... See, I was going to see how many pins they are. Cause I
they vary.
I think there were...
Some of them are 144, some of them are 100. It just depends on the form factor. The number of pins vary depending on what sort of... Whether it's DDR, DDR2, SDRAM, SDRAM, for example, on a SODIM is 144 pin, I believe, as opposed to 168. Voltage can vary, usually 3.3 volt RAM in laptop rather than 5.
Laptop CPUs are designed to be smaller and cooler while still trying to provide most of the processing power as desktops. As a result, you want these to be small, so they don't usually use heat sinks because that would make the computer a whole lot bigger. They're able to use CPU throttling to clock the speed back as needed to reduce power consumption and heat. We talked about this in Module 1. You'll find on your laptops that you might have a power controlling utility. The EEPC has one, and you can choose which mode it's going to be in as to how it will throttle your CPU. You'll have a slight decrease in performance.
Well, that's good, Quitter. Control Windows down arrow indeed. Somebody's tweeting their Quitter stream, you're keyed up. You might want to go in and out of the setup dialogue.
Oh, he fell asleep. I was a key.
I was trying to figure it out by their tweets and location. But
just another handy hint. We actually... That's all right. We actually swapped the template around so that the you get rid of the word posted, and you also move the time to the end, and that way it's just name tweet the time, and it's a lot quicker that way. Just a handy Quitter hint since we had it on lecture. If anybody wants my profile, drop me an email, and I will give you the changes you make to make skimming the tweets faster.
Throttling your computer also... Oh, okay. Throttling increases the lifespan of your components because they're going to have much less wear and tear from the heat. The processors allow the laptop to operate for a longer period of time when they're not plugged into the wall because they're actually going to use less power, and the throttling really helps. If you're going to replace a processor in a laptop, honestly, I would just almost think about buying a new one because it's going to be easier and cheaper and they just get more powerful so fast. But if you're gonna do it, make sure you refer to the manual and the manufacturer to find out actually what processors might work in your laptop. Any questions on laptop processors?
Did we even see mine when we pulled it apart? Because I was hoping to see the processor, but I couldn't actually find it.
We did.
And all that mess and destruction. I don't think we were looking for the processor. Well, I was, and I think I mentioned
were
it
you?
To you, but I don't think we stumbled across it.
I don't think we actually did either. But they're... they're much smaller, and they produce way less heat. Okay, we will come back to power management next week, and you guys can start working on your module 6 labs if you'd like to, or you can keep trying to catch up if that's what you need to do. If you need anything, we are available by email. You can come and talk to us. And if you want help with anything, let us know, and we'll come on Ventrilo or Skype and help you out. But we don't know that you need help unless you let us know. Okay, any questions before we stop recording?